and welcome to a very special edition of the Full Force Newsburst, brought to you by GeneralsJoesReborn.com, with me as your host, Chris, at your mercy, McLeod, aka Diagnostic 80. That'll become evident in a second. On this instalment of your absolutely favourite kind of burst, I am joined by the awesome YouTube star, Michael Mercy, to talk about his insanely popular channel and love of 80s trends in general. Well, you know, I will stop in a sec. So without further ado, let's get stuck into this Mercy Burst, or this News Merst.
Hi everyone, I am Michael at your Chris Mercy, is that how that works?
Michael at your Christopher. So,
at your Mercy.
4 score and 5 months ago, I appeared as a guest on Michael Mercy's awesome YouTube channel on an episode of Toy Guys Talking, and I made a promise to get him on our show. Only 5 months on, not bad, eh? Michael joins me tonight to chat about his amazing channel and, of course, his love for all sorts of 80s brands, and I couldn't be happier to welcome him to the Full Force universe, or FFU, as he so eloquently put it 5 months ago. Of course I remember it. In fact, I've been trying to rebrand it slowly, but I can't find a way to get FFU in there without being really offensive. Anyway, thank you so much for jumping on, Michael. How are you doing, my good man?
Fantastic. Thanks so much for having me. Wasn't it the double FU? Was that supposed to be a little more politically correct?
That's a good one. Yeah, double FU work. I mean, it's people are going to say, people are going to use their own, like, you know, they're going to go, okay, well, it says FFU. So they'll either do the double FU because they love re-nicknaming nicknames, don't they? Have you noticed that? People love doing their own nicknames of what are essentially nicknames.
Are we at the point yet where we're abbreviating abbreviations?
Yes, we're abbreviations. That's what we're going to call them.
Like BFF is going to be just B. Birth. It's not even going to be a complete B. It's going to be a half written B and a half written F.
It'll just be a noise. It'll just be...
But thanks so much for having me back on. I've been waiting a while to do this.
My bad.
Go Force!
Go Force, Yo Force, Full Force, yo, all of the forces. Do you remember, I mean, yeah, well, I remember that the chat we had on your episode on the Toy Guys Talking, which I had so much fun doing, by the way. That was such a good, enjoyable kind of like chat. And and I remember these things popping up, and we were talking about the cartoon, weren't we, and how the Action Force overdubs, you'd get that Go Force, Yo Force, and Full Force instead of Yo Joe every now and again. So, yeah, I'm glad we're remembering and bringing up all of these things from all that time ago.
Well, that's why we put these things up, so we can remember.
Exactly.
And just a heads up to all of the Full Force listeners out there. I've had some requests for the Toy Guys Talking, which is a segment on my YouTube channel.
Brilliant.
Thank you. And thank you again so much for appearing on it. That was a blast. I've had a lot of requests for people asking, can that be a podcast too? I'd like to listen to it in the car or at work or while I'm gardening or even, working on my G.I. Joes and Action Force custom projects. So it is. It's on Podbean, just like Full Force, and you can find it on all sorts of different podcatchers, Stitcher, iTunes. Just got the email a few minutes ago that it's on Google Play too.
Awesome.
So Michael Mercy Presents Toy Guys Talking podcast coming at you, and give that a listen after you're done Full Force, though.
Absolutely, give it a listen. It's amazing. In fact, don't even finish the Full Force. Stop listening to our show.
No. No, I didn't come in here to...
It's completely taken over. It's switched over to the Full Mercy.
I'm not here to hijack Full Force. No, it's quite an honor to be on the Full Force. I've listened for a long time, and this is awesome.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. In terms of the links, we'll obviously throw all those links in the YouTube video that we're going to put up, and obviously on Facebook and all that kind of good stuff. So if you want to jump on those links, we'll have them all over the place to make it almost impossible not to listen to Michael Mercy.
But these guys are Joe fans and Action Force fans. I mean, they're a little more capable than your average fan.
They very
much
are.
Why don't you make it a little more interesting and a little more challenging and just say, you figure it out. You find it.
It's a make your own adventure now, guys. So you can just work it out yourself. Let's get into this interview with you. And I know you prefer nice, relaxing chats, but I'm way more like, hell no, I need like a document that's sent with like questions on it and everything, because that's just the way I am. I'm just super organized.
It's good to have a guideline, but it's also, you know, good to be able to adapt
totally
to any situation. So if you ask me one of your pre prepared questions and I answer with, you know, my favorite pajamas, something completely off topic,
then
let's roll with it.
Expect the unexpected for this one, guys.
Yes.
So, I mean, first off, tell us how you got into doing a YouTube channel in the first place, if you could, please. And also, I mean, what's your background in terms of, like, you know, I suppose the visual and the audio aspect of what you do?
Well, Super Mario Brothers pajamas are my favorite. Pajamas. My wife bought me a pair of them. But no, seriously, my first introduction to YouTube was in 2010 with my good friend Matt Crandall, who is Cinematic Crandall now. And we had been hanging out watching movies for quite some time. We met at a local film festival because he was a indie filmmaker and I had dabbled a little bit with student films. And every time we finish a movie, we were discussing it like I had nothing I'd ever seen before. You know, we were basically, I don't know if you're familiar with Siskel and Ebert. You remember those guys?
Yeah.
The movie, critics,
yes.
Reviewers, but I always appreciated their in-depth discussion and they kind of, what I called, armchair directed it a bit.
Yes.
Like, this would have been better if they did this and this would have been better if they did that. So we were doing that for quite a while and I had the camera there in the room, you know, because I was doing little short films, music videos. And I said, there's this YouTube thing and people are talking about movies on it. Why don't we just turn the camera on and this chat we're about to have about, what was the first one? Zombieland. I think we had just finished Zombieland.
Cool.
And why don't we just tape this and put it on? And YouTube wasn't then what it is now, but we just decided let's do it. And, you know, there's obviously first time you're trying to do something, the fear that it'll be awful.
Oh God. Yeah.
But I try to, you know, it's a good thing to step out of your comfort zone, sometimes hurl yourself out of your comfort zone by the scruff of the neck. And so we did it and it was awful. And I kind of have always worn that as a badge of pride, like, look how bad I was. Cause right from the beginning, I always felt like I'll get better.
Yeah.
And I'll always have that low, like grab a shovel, dig a hole in the ground. Cause ground level isn't enough, you know, thing to compare myself to. Just, it doesn't matter in life what it is you do. The more you do it, in theory, you should get better.
Yeah, totally. You know? unless you get stuck with habits, but you're right.
Yeah, exactly. So we did that for quite some time. And then we both started up our own solo channels to kind of do things that didn't really fall under the armchair director's brand, if you want to call it a brand. But he was doing a few collectibles and movies that I really had no interest in ever seeing, smaller movies. And I had the toy collection going, and I was a big fan of it, all things 80s, especially after Stranger Things.
Yeah.
That show just completely reinvigorated my love and my passion for all things 80s.
Oh, big time,
and it made me realize how much I loved the 80s because it went, this show is so awesome. It's so fun.
Yeah.
Its heart is so in the right place. And then I started to look around at other shows and go, hey, why isn't every show like this? What's going on here? And then as I started to go back in time to get that Stranger Things feeling, and I was finding it in so many 80s things.
Yeah.
So that's what the genesis was of my YouTube channel, just going back in time and taking a look at toys seems to be one of the most popular things that I cover, but also books, comics, anything really.
Yeah. And I mean, didn't you do like a little film review recently as well? So I mean, you're kind of doing like pretty much everything under the gamut of like, of the 80s brands and stuff like that and stuff that doesn't necessarily fall under that banner all the time. But I found it really interesting watching your videos and looking at your channel, especially with like the history stuff that you do. And I mean, I was going to come onto this a little bit later on. I wanted to ask you a question related to your kind of, you know, your background and everything. A lot of people, they were collected toys when they were kids, right? Obviously, because they're kids. They get to that point where maybe they go to high school and they stop doing it. They maybe drop out of it for a little bit. And then they come back into it another time period. Was that the case with yourself? Or did you just, was it like a constant thing? Did you always maybe check toy aisles, even when you were in high school, maybe going through early 20s or through college or something like that? Or was it a case where you dropped it and then and picked up later in life?
It definitely slowed down a bit. I think I always... You know, I've always been visiting my local Toys R Us, but it did definitely slow down because, like most people, the older that you get, you're told that it's time to put away childish things and this is more important and that's more important. I don't think there was ever a point where I didn't have a single collectible out anywhere. I've always just, that's how I've connected with all the stuff that I am passionate about. So even when the 80s toys were either gone because they were all given away or played with, into oblivion, I still had a lot of movie stuff, you know, as I was getting a little more mature. And getting mature is one of the biggest mistakes I've ever made.
Big time.
Along with haircuts, if you remember that Jim Morrison quote, some of my biggest mistakes have been haircuts.
I can definitely, but, definitely feel him on that. Yeah, big time.
But I just love having something. It's a synergy. Walt Disney used to use that term all the time, synergy. It's not just the movie. And it's peculiar to me how everyone goes so crazy about the movie. You know, the movie's coming out, the movie, and they don't realize the movie isn't the magic. The synergy is the magic. The sum is greater than its parts. So having a Terminator figure or an Aliens little miniature APC or a Star Trek Enterprise little model ship with lights and sounds, that's a synergy. That makes me love the show more, and the show makes me love that model more. Yeah. And that's how that all kind of flows together. So, you know, after the Stranger Things show, I just, as I was watching the older 80s shows, I was watching the old cartoons again, falling in love with them again, and comparing them to the newer version. It's kind of like you got the original version of, you know, the Mustang compared to the new Mustang or Corvettes. It's very similar to cars. You look at the old one, you look at the new one, you go, man, that new one just doesn't have the same, you know, magic as the original. And, you know, that just made me love the originals that I was lucky enough to grow up on even more.
Well, let's talk about your channel for a little bit now as well, actually. I mean, it currently has over 40,000 subscribers. So, wow. Well done on that one.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Tribe.
Congratulations. That's amazing. And like I said, it covers a range of different video types. I mean, you've got reviews on there, the Toy Guy talking chats, which are just brilliant. Obviously, I will be biased on that one because I appeared on it.
You know, it's actually a scientific fact that the one you appeared on is the best one yet.
Oh, really?
They measured it.
Oh, perfect. I'm glad. You had Dr. Mindbender and Venom on it. Dr. Venom on it.
Neil deGrasse Tyson weighed in. He said it was the best.
I'll believe him.
I'm kidding. They're all tied for best.
No, but I know what you're saying. Mine was definitely the best. Unboxings that you do as well. I've been enjoying those recently.
I'll tell you after.
Yeah, tell me afterwards.
Just between me and you that yours was actually the best.
Just between me and you, of course. Yeah. No one can hear that. I'll cut that out. I'm kidding.
Cut this whole part.
It's all getting cut. The whole thing is. So, I mean, you generally operate, like I said, you generally operate around the 80s brand products. What is it about that era specifically? And not necessarily just nostalgia, but, and you mentioned magic a minute ago, but what is it about that era that just creates some of the best properties certainly in my opinion as well?
Great question, Christopher. Before I move on to it, I just want to clarify that was sarcasm, me asking him to cut that part out, because it seems as though these days a lot of people don't seem to recognize sarcasm. So I find myself having to do that a lot online. Like,
you have to over explain things. Yes. I've noticed that a lot. That's happened recently with a few posts. You know, if I post something on Facebook, I can't just say a flippant comment that is maybe just a play on words or a joke related to a character, because people won't take it that way. They'll be like, well, actually, this is this particular character from this, and in this episode, this happened. So yeah, they have done that. And it's like, what are you talking about? It was a flippant comment on a character that I know. Like, the thing that makes me laugh is this constant need to fansplain everything.
Yeah.
You know, like this constant thing to be like, well, I need to show everyone that I know everything in the universe. And it's like, everyone knows everything in the universe because everyone has Google at their fingertips. So don't worry. The information is not going to be lost on most, and if people have questions, then you can answer it in the comments. But yeah, that drives me mad, as you can tell.
Oh, good brother, testify. and those people, like the ones who just blow things out of proportion and stuff like that, I call them people who are looking for an opportunity to be offended. We really shouldn't make the effort to explain things to them, but it just seems to me like it's easier to just clarify than, you know, because these things can snowball, and then you go, man, I wish I had just kind of nipped that in the bud.
Yeah.
But in terms of why the 80s?
Oh yeah, that question.
Again, it's a good thing I remembered and did say, what was your...
It's a very good point.
The 80s, again, it's something that I hadn't really realized until just a few years ago. I think I meant touch on it in the first Toy Museum virtual tour, yeah. Where I talk about, it's not just about what's on the shelves, it's about who's on the shelves. And I was noticing there were so many characters being brought back, and I just felt like I was being misled, because they said, here's your character that you love, that you have a connection with, you're passionate for this character. It's, and we're not just talking, oh, I like him, he's kind of cool. We're talking father figure. Like Optimus Prime was a father figure to so many people.
Yeah.
Or Duke, so many other 80s characters. And so you're kind of sold a bill of goods.
Yeah.
You're told this is going to be special to you. You won't just like this. This will pull the heartstrings.
Yeah.
This is your old friend. I haven't seen him in ages. And then they show up and they're nothing like they were. The spirit has been completely changed. They're BA. I always use that term because, you know, keep things clean for the kids. maybe that's a little extreme, but, you know. So I just started to feel like, look, this is the character in name only. And what's in a name? Nothing. The name doesn't matter to me anymore. That's why I'm such a huge fan of Captain America and the Marvel movies, because I didn't really grow up on Captain America. I didn't read the comics. I didn't really watch any cartoons with him in. I don't have any
nostalgia. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I have no nostalgia for the MCU Chris Evans Captain America, but I'll tell you, I love him like he's like I grew up on him,
because
he is Duke. He is Optimus Prime. He is He-Man. And so
he was brilliant in the Marvel. Yeah, you're right. I totally agree with that as well. Like, I think he was fantastic in the Marvel movies as Captain America.
Yeah. So he is all those characters, but not in name. Isn't that funny?
Yeah, totally.
So he embodies everything those characters embodied, just not the name. Whereas we get those old characters back and they embody very little sometimes, sometimes nothing.
Sometimes, zero,
sometimes sometimes they don't even look the same. They're all clad in leather, like in Rise of Cobra, but they got the name. And that just started to make me feel like, you know, the name I don't really care about.
Yeah.
I'm more concerned about the feel. And that's intangible. It's something that can't be measured.
Yeah.
Can't be measured with box office or with value. It can't be graded by some sort of graders. It's just this intangible thing. And that's the thing that really hits the heart for me. It's not something that you can attach a value to. It's just a feeling.
Like, it seemed like in the 80s, there were a lot of original brands being created as well. There's a lot of new kind of things being brought into the fray. I'm not necessarily new ideas, but certainly new brands and new characters. I mean, like we said, like there's a lot of things that embodied Prime and Duke that would have been in characters that came out prior to those two being in the forefront. But in terms of, like, you know, a property, like G.I. Joe had been going from the 60s, but it was completely radicalized and changed and made completely different. So at least that was like a change. Transformers drew from other things, but for the most part was a new thing. But then all the other properties that we tend to be drawn to, and again, putting nostalgia aside, because, you know, it's easy to say, yeah, well, I like that because it was just when I was a kid. That's not always the case, because there were some things when I was a kid that I didn't like, and I'm not that fussed about seeing again. But there was, it seems to me there were a lot of properties that came out that were brand new that were just really, like, you know, that made the eyes kind of, you know, glow a little bit. You were just like, oh my God, yes. So, I mean, do you think that had a lot to do with it? Kind of a lot of, and I say originality very loosely, because I know people are going to go like, well, G.I. Joe had been out since 60s and stuff. Yeah, but I mean, like, in terms of, you know, there were a lot of brands that were brand new. So, and not like I said, a lot of the values were the same, but a lot of the visual aspect was brand new.
Yeah, there was so much more creativity in the 80s. And it's kind of the polar opposite. We've got the inverse, I think, today. In the 80s, it seems like they were drawing inspiration from all sorts of things. You mentioned Transformers, and Transformers is just a mishmash of a bunch of different things.
Yeah.
Takara toys and a couple of other things they licensed, and and different story elements from different stories, but they named it something original, Transformers. So it burst on the scene with no name value whatsoever. And so many properties of the 80s had the boldness to say, here's something that's sort of like Conan the Barbarian, but it's our own magical spin on it,
there you
and
go.
We're going to call it He-Man.
Yeah.
These days, I just don't see that happening. These days, it's okay. It's original, but it's got the old name. So
yeah.
Why aren't you just you know, they have their studies, and you know, it's all about profit and brand recognition equals money. But I'm just wondering, if Rise of Cobra had come out called anything but G.I. Joe Rise of Cobra, wouldn't that have been like a really cool, wow, what is this? This, you know, people would might have said, this kind of reminds me of G.I. Joe. This is cool.
I don't think it would have been cool, though, because I know what you mean, though. Yeah, the baggage of the Joe brand probably lent it into,
because you're sitting there. Like so many fans,
you're still garbage.
Not any of your fans. No one listening right now. I'm not talking about anyone listening right now. But there are a few people, let's say two, who sit there with their arms crossed, and all they do is nitpick.
I do that sometimes.
But they get no enjoyment whatsoever out of their hobby. They feel as though their purpose in life is to find flaws.
Yes.
And there were quite a few people who sat and watched Rise of Cobra. Now, I didn't enjoy that movie, you know, at all. But if it hadn't been called G.I. Joe, I wouldn't have, you know, I think a lot of people wouldn't have sat there and said, that's not Duke. Duke doesn't have a, you know, he was wearing. He doesn't act like that. And, you know, just whatever character you can think of, you know, that character isn't supposed to be like that. Cobra Commander's supposed to have the chrome dome. And just if you hadn't used that supposedly powerful brand name, then all of these nitpicks and criticisms wouldn't have been occurring as frequently. And I think that movie, now I've kind of backed myself into a dangerous corner here. I don't want this to sound like I'm sticking up for Rise of Cobra. I should have said Retaliation instead, because I think it's a little better.
Good point, though. It's a good point. I mean, that if you take away the brand name and put something else on it, does it have any kind of effect at all? What I would have imagined actually is if you took the G.I. Joe brand off it and you put, you know, and you just make a summer movie with, you know, I don't know, like action dudes or like
yo dudes
and dudettes.
Here's a different example too.
Action guys, just to make it, you know, men or women. But like, I think that if that just happened, it would probably just been a forgetful movie that you know, is maybe like might have a little cult following now. Do you know what I mean?
Here's probably a better example. Masters of the Universe, the 80s live action movie.
Yes, beauty.
What's your opinion on that
one? I love it. But more so because, again, it's more nostalgia that drives that than anything else. Because I'm fully aware of how awful it is. But there's just something about it that I love it.
And what about the sequel that wasn't the actual sequel? Cyborg.
Oh, yeah. No, do you know what? That's a good point.
That's a great
example,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they were supposed to do a sequel of it. Funding or whatever fell through. The first one didn't make enough. And so the Masters of the Universe sequel ended up being a Jean-Claude Van Damme. I've never seen it, so I don't know how good it is.
I've seen
but
it.
They changed the name to it. And that's exactly what we're talking about here. Instead of calling it MOTU2, Electric Boogaloo. They just called it Cyborg, and
it's personal. Yeah,
and this time, yeah, it just kind of
Pig in the City.
Yeah, it wasn't as maligned as Masters of the Universe has been.
No, I can definitely agree with that. But the thing with Masters of the Universe, unfortunately, is there are so many visual cues that tie it into the, you know, into Masters of the Universe that it's like it's different with Rise of Cobra. I think it's only really like Snake Eyes, Storm Shadow and like Cobra Commander that really, you know, exude the old school kind of designs. I mean, the Baroness, yeah, she's in all black and she's got glasses, but that's about as far as it goes. Like, you could probably get away with her just being a different character completely. With Master of the Universe, like, I don't know, I look at Master of the Universe and I think there's so much in that, you know, obviously they change. They changed like the bad guys quite dramatically, but I loved, what was it, Blade? I can't remember what his name. I think it was Blade. Yeah, Blade. He was amazing, like with the bald guy with the swords and everything. I thought he was wicked, and the toys were really cool as well. Sorry, I'm the worst person to ask that question to, unfortunately.
What about? I always wish they had made a Lubick figure. The human, you know, with the, I forget, was it a shotgun or some kind of rifle?
Yes,
but
exactly.
I always wished he had come out with a figure on the regular He-Man card with the red exploding stones background. And it was just like this regular man.
Yeah.
Like his name would be Hugh-Man.
They do the head sculpt normally, but then they put it on the body they always reuse.
No, but he'd need the coat, like the trench coat.
That could be like a cloth or like a vinyl over, you know, like a secondary. Yeah, yeah. But you definitely have to have him on the same body that they always reused in the Masters line. Because that would be hilarious. Bridges. Yes. With the pants and the furry boot toppers and everything. It'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, we've gone on a massive tangent, but that's great. And yeah,
that's what we do.
I'm down with that. Coming back to your videos, let's focus on your YouTube channel again. I mean, there's a real high quality in them. Like, I mean, they're incredible. And I'm pointing not at anyone in particular, because they're all great, but that watching the Visionaries histories that you did, the part, I think it was two parts. It might have been more. Was it two parts?
I did one for 87, which is when all of the regular toys were released.
And then series two.
And then series two, I was going to do that 1988 unreleased series as one video, and it grew into something the size of Iron Mountain. And so I ended up deciding that'll have to be a three-parter. So the first one is out for that one.
Brilliant. So that's what I wanted to focus on, because the level of quality in that video is second to none. It's like the pinnacle of kind of YouTube professionalism, like, if that's even a thing.
Isn't that an oxymoron?
It's a massive moron. But
YouTube professionalism.
It's a hydroxymoron. That's a character. That's definitely a character in something. Hydroxymoron.
I think that was one of the unreleased series two figures. Hydroxymoron.
Hydroxymoron was definitely in there. I'm gonna note that down. But that video is so good because you went above and beyond, because you did like these, you know, where you kind of read out the kind of spells, and you gave him like this kind of beautiful background music, and also like this lovely kind of, like, you know, effects and sound effects and stuff around those things. And the visuals are so good with the explosions and I love explosions, as you can imagine, and all of those kind of, like, you know, very high-end quality effects that just go into making a quick YouTube video. In let's be honest, you put so much into that, and it's one of my favorite videos to watch, because I got so much more enjoyment out of it being a massive Visionaries fan. No, you know, we did a 9-hour podcast on Visionaries, so like that's how, you know, into it we are. And the level you went to redo, like, and make up spells for the series two characters was just that was the chef's kiss, et voila. That was the thing for me. If you haven't seen this, guys, go onto Michael Mercy's YouTube channel and get up the Visionaries one and part, and technically part one of part two. Absolutely superb level of effort in that. I mean, I'm sorry, and to get to a question here before just licking your bumhole clean.
You can continue for as long as you want. That you have no idea how much time went into that. So please, another 20 minutes.
Okay, so because of that amazing high quality standard, et cetera, how important is it for you to create content to that standard? I mean, is that because you do it, you seem to do it every video, so obviously it must be important to you.
I can't help myself, honestly. There have been times where, everybody feels this way when you have a task to do, even if it's something that you absolutely love and you want to put your heart and soul into it, and you get to the point, and I definitely did with History of Visionaries 88 part one. Eventually I found out it was part one. You get to that point where it just won't end, because the line had so much potential, and that's why you were able to do as much on it as you could, because it was just endless, untapped potential. The world of Prismos and the characters and the creativity that went into it, you wouldn't think it with how few episodes they made and few toys, but when you really immerse yourself in it, you can be in Prismos for a very, very long time.
Absolutely.
And it will never get boring. So doing the video, you know, there's obviously everyone feels gets the feeling of let's kind of wrap this up. And I've never really been able to do that. It's irritating to me to know that I've taken a shortcut just for the sake of getting on to the next thing, because it deserves much more than that, even something that never existed. So the second year wasn't released, but the prototypes were there. We have the pictures, we had the characters. And I thought there was so much potential, so much effort went into this and creativity. We have the characters, they have their names, they have their weapons.
Hydroxymoron.
Yeah, Hydroxymoron. And someone even went to the effort of designing the holograms on their shields and on their chests. And I thought, as I'm doing, I never intended to, when I began the project, but I thought, these guys need their poems. And because they don't exist, well, you know, I can rhyme here and there a little bit.
Spit some freestyles.
I can. That's what they need to bring visionaries back as.
Hip hop for a.
Unfortunately, I'm not a rap fan, so I can't name some of the big rappers these days. But
Word Burglar, you know, Diagnostic AT.
Will Smith should be in there for sure. I couldn't stop. Like that was really, and I find that happening a lot of the time. Just now working on, just to do a quick segue to G.I. Joe, I'm working on the history of G.I. Joe 1986.
Awesome.
And I get to the point where I'm talking about General Hawk. He was one of the 86 figures. And the plan was to just show you Hawk on a turntable and talk about him a bit, show a clip and move on to the next guy. Well, not to spoil anything, but Hawk says something that I thought was very inspiring to me. And I thought, well, I've got to go and do something about this. I actually have to kind of act this out as well as I can with the figure. And it wasn't anything all that elaborate or complicated. But, you know, from start to finish, it did take an hour, you know, maybe to put it all together. It was an extra bit of time. And instead of thinking, oh, man, this is just taking too long. I got to get the thing out. I've always had the feeling of quality over quantity. Yeah. So it needs it. I mean, he's an inspiring character. Sometimes we can't always get that across. Like if someone says, why is Hawk inspiring? I have some trouble kind of explaining that because
I know why Hawk's inspiring. It's his voice.
Peach had sent me a message about your promotions. I came back to square things away. Follow me.
I mean, like, the way he's portrayed in the cartoons, he's just got that, like, very... It's like a commanding... You instantly feel... And this is, like, again, this is down to, like, incredible voice actors and incredible voice acting direction by Wally Burr and all the guys that were involved in the G.I. Joe cartoon and writing from Buzz Dixon and the other writers as well. You know, you've got... What you got there is this kind of really perfect storm of characterization of the highest level. Because you have... Mm. I know, a lot of people will think that's a very... That's a lot to say about what is effectively an 80s cartoon. But I swear to God, out of all the cartoons out there, G.I. Joe is that one, or Action Force as I know it, that has... It has really strong characterization to the point where people, and they whether they know it or not, they hear those voices when they read the comics, when they played with the toys as kids, whatever it was, they hear those voices. And with Hawk, he just had the most commanding... As soon as he started talking, I'm like, it's good, it's cool, everything's fine now, Hawk has just said something. You know, like, parachuting in that time in that episode where I think it's like Shipwreck, Lifeline, and Dial Tone get kind of promoted.
Oh.
But Cobra do it on purpose, don't they, to kind of mess with the...
Most dangerous thing in the world.
Yes, exactly. And he comes in, like, he even, like... The beauty part of that is he ejected from a fighter jet to parachute in and ruined the fighter. Or I think there's another guy in the fighter jet and he's like, well, great. I'm just going to fly it with no cockpit now. I can't remember. I'm going to have to watch that again to double check. Either it flies off and crashes and kills loads of people in a town nearby, or the poor pilot is left to go like, no windshield for the rest of the journey.
This is Hawk. You know, he probably steered it into a Cobra Pterodrome.
He probably did.
But that voice always reminded me so much of Optimus Prime.
Follow me, Autobots.
So yes. When that season came out, I was thinking, wait a second. Duke is the leader. And then Flint under him. Who's this guy who just leapfrogged everybody? But that voice, you're right, you hear it and it's commanding, but it's also a little just tiny bit gentle.
Yes, it makes you feel safe. Isn't that weird? But totally.
It's like I refer to him as kind of like a young grandfatherly sounding voice. You know, he's got wisdom and age and a little bit of gentleness. He's not just, you know, Sergeant Slaughter.
Good work, Slammer. This is just what the Force needs to get motivated. Happy to hear that. Because with all due respect, General Hawk, you're Action Force and you're going to join them.
Yes, sir.
Pick them up and put them down. Yay, hop, 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 hop.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And that's what I mean about the characterization, you know, like the way those cartoons were written to kind of give those characters enough space to operate in their own zones, basically, without kind of, you know, overshadowing others. I mean, like, you know, Dial Tone's got that really, you know, he's got a really strong voice and character.
Look, Cross Country, since I'm an officer, I don't think anyone will object if I implement a few improvements to the system.
You can pick any character, and even if one person does the, like, you know, six of the voices, they all sound different. They all have their own character. And that is something that I found, I think, is one of the things, one of the reasons why G.I. Joe, A, was really, really, really successful back in the day, and B, while it hasn't really been able to get that similar feeling back in later years in other media, you know?
Absolutely. And I just watched The Spy Who Rooked Me the other day.
Gentlemen, I dare say Cobra will be watching this area around the lab. They'll be expecting us to employ a large force, and they'll be ready for it. I suggest we send a small, unobtrusive escort mission of four top soldiers to move the container. And the mission must be top secret. Not even the soldiers guarding it should know what they're transporting.
Oh, what an episode that is.
Yeah. Yeah, I was completely mesmerized by it. It was fantastic. And it wasn't like playing in the background. This is an old cartoon that, you know, I don't enjoy as much. As,
oh, no.
Like, I was watching it going, really appreciating the writing, appreciating everything about it. Because I had listened back to part of that discussion I had with Buzz Dixon.
I love
And he
Buzz.
Was talking about how, yeah, he is just a fantastic man, very inspiring. And when he was working on Sunbow, he said, we were selling toys. That was the job.
Yeah.
But we were trying to tell great stories. We were using it as an opportunity to tell great stories, not just sell toys. And so the episode Spy Who Rooked Me is a perfect example.
Oh,
that
so good.
You would think that their purpose for that episode is push out the 86 toys. But Flint and Lady J are two of the main characters in the episode.
Yeah.
Old stock, right?
Yeah.
But they're the main characters because whoever wrote the story said, well, you know, we're not going to just ignore the old stock. These are important characters. The fans have connected with them, and we can't just shuffle them off and kill them all off like, you know, they did in Transformers season 3.
Wow.
So
the great cull of 80, was it 6? 87?
Yeah. So there was no culling of G.I. Joe in the 86 seasons. I love that they held on to those older characters, and you even still see Duke from time to time in 86. So that's what I really appreciated about the G.I. Joe Sunbow show. And then I keep trying to watch the Deke series. I keep trying
to
give it a
shot. It's hard work. It really is. It's the only thing I think I like about the Deke cartoon is the fact that they squeezed in so many characters, and obviously like new design deco for certain characters as well. So, I mean, you know, you get Road Pig and his Sonic Fighters deco in some episodes and stuff like that. So that's why I like it, because I can identify large numbers of characters, and obviously all the different troopers they throw in, like Flak Vipers and Undertows and all that kind of stuff. And you just think, oh, wow, they've really gone above and beyond to get all of the toys on the screen. Unfortunately, it falls down in the writing and the execution, because some of the storylines are so ridiculous. It's like where Sunbow was actually like, it had a nice balance with sci-fi, with reality, but then also future military, and then also at the same time it had a good writing balance. Deke struggles because it has this over the top ridiculous premises, and it turns into this goofy joke, like a comedy.
Yeah, I think their purpose was to sell toys, and one of the things Buzz mentioned was they brought him back on the Deke series and then fired him because I would imagine like his desire would have been to write a good story,
exactly,
a la Sunbow G.I. Joe, and probably given an edict of no, you're selling this figure and this vehicle. And, you know, the voice actors are fine, but the voices, like you said before, you know, it's the voices I just don't enjoy on the Deke series.
Metalhead.
You know?
Range 200! Target locked! Bang! Bang! Ah! I got it! I got it! Oh, see it burn! Kaboom!
That has got to be the most grating
bang bang
thing that happens. But like bang bang bang, and he's like screaming all the time. It's like, oh.
Yeah, but I'm thinking of the Joes. Like every single G.I. Joe has such a distinctive voice, and while I can't do a dead on impression of them, I know the voice, and the voice is important to the character. Like, you know, I know Ricondo's voice.
That's it, baby. Come to Papa.
And Flint has that deep, commanding voice. Yeah. And
time for a game of hide and seek.
And Dial Tone kind of has that nasally
nurse. That's a good
one.
That's a good one, yeah. Yeah.
You're wrong! The Havocs can still do the job!
They all have such distinctive voices. And then I put Deke on, and every guy sounds the same. Come on, we gotta go. No, we can't go yet. Nah, we do have to go. Like, every guy sounds the same.
That's actually not far from the writing as well. Like, you got some of the lyrics.
And then you hear Chris Latta, and you're like, what is he doing in this thing?
Yeah, incredible. I mean, I think that's the thing. I've put the litmus test for me, is when I, like you say, and they put it on in the background. You put G.I. Joe on in the background, and you know, you're doing stuff or whatever.
Yes,
but what will happen is the Sunbow cartoon will make me stop doing what I'm trying to do, and I'll just end up watching
it. That's exactly what the Rook. Spy Who Rooked Me did.
Yeah, and Deke, when I put that on in the background, it's like, oh God, I just turn the volume right down, and every now and again I'll just look at the screen. Because it's like, that's the thing, I don't want to diss too much about it, because I do love a lot about it. It's just that if you're going to compare the two, there's no comparison. That's the problem, isn't there, really?
I think it's fair to say the Deke series is very similar to Rise of Cobra.
Yes.
In that it was G.I. Joe, a real American hero in name, but not in same purpose. And it definitely, you know, as I try to give it my full undivided attention, I just notice this is the heart's in a different place this time.
Yeah.
And I got into one episode where two guys, maybe it was Ambush and Pathfinder, I think, they're sneaking out of a hospital and they're dressed
as
nurses. And they fool Gridiron, who's just completely like this would not be happening in a Sunbow. And they're in a hospital bed wearing their helmets. Sunbow, they always made sure, like, you know,
when Leatherneck and Wetsuit got injured in My Favorite Things, or like the Serpentor episode, they're in the hospital bed, like with their wounds or whatever, and they're not wearing their gear.
It's like
that's right. That's how it should be.
It's a little bit extra work. And I guess this kind of comes back full circle to how I like to make my videos, but it's a little bit more work, but it deserves it. So having them in their gowns, like for the animators, it's more work, but that's how it should be. Hawk sitting at his desk should have his helmet on the desk.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Sometimes he's wearing his helmet. I know that even in Spy Who Rooked Me, I believe he's wearing his helmet at, you know, sitting down talking to people at one point. But if they could do it, they did, because they didn't want to treat the audience stupidly.
Yeah.
And they said, look, like, we're trying to just not make this completely realistic, but put enough in here that it kind of suspends your disbelief.
Yes.
Whereas in the Deke series, it's just every shortcut possible. And I guess that's
money,
why I
cost as well.
Yeah. And that's why another reason I just can't take shortcuts, because if you put this thing out there, people are not just going to watch it once. I hear from a lot of folks who say, I've watched your video.
The Visionaries episode like about 30 times. Like, I was so into that. Like, you have no idea. Nothing else, just those.
Well, you should try one of the other videos. But I recommend the Toy Guys Talking with Full Force Podcast.
I do, honestly. I really enjoy those chats. And obviously that one you did with, or the two you did with Analog Tony from Analog Toys. Cracking fella. Was really... I just really enjoyed watching that one. And when you guys were talking about Rambo figures, I was just like, you know, it's one of those ones where I think I even mentioned it when I was messaging you, or I was messaging, like, it was something to do with, like, maybe it was on the YouTube channel. And I said, man, it was one of those moments where I was like talking along with the two of you, and then I realized I wasn't in a room with the two of you. Do you know what I mean? It was like almost a... Yeah. It was one of those ones where you see that jokey meme when people are really enjoying a podcast. It's like, it's that guy standing next to a poster with all those people. Like, chatting away. That's how I felt with that episode.
That's a big compliment. I love to hear that because we've all been in situations where we're hanging out with someone and maybe we're the quiet one, or maybe someone else in the group was the quiet one. And
I've never been the quiet one in a group.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, if some people just like to kind of hang back and enjoy the atmosphere, and they, you're not going to say, hey, get out of here, you're not talking enough. So I think that's the point of a good conversation. You know, a good podcast is to have people just listening along and laugh along and get frustrated along.
I'm sorry, Michael, I've gone over your stats on our last conversation and you've only said 45 words. I'm afraid you're going to have to bring that up to at least 73 for the next conversation. Otherwise, you'll be relegated to only once a month coming around and talking to me. That's what it feels like.
Yeah, the algorithm.
I've run the stats, I've run the analysis, and I just need 55 more words off you, if that's okay.
We've got a quota to keep here. Exactly.
Oh, mate. Anyway.
I got a quick question for you, actually.
Okay, go for it.
Have you ever done a podcast? You don't have to name names, but have you ever done a chat interview with someone? And it was like pulling teeth.
Yes.
And so you basically, in wrestling, I don't know if you're a wrestling fan, but they call it working with a broom when a wrestler wrestles a really bad wrestler. And they go like, this guy could, you know, work with a broom. Have you ever basically, have you done one by yourself, even though technically someone else was sitting on the other end?
I could fill a broom cupboard with the amount. No. I've had occasions where it's been difficult in the process of actually interviewing, it could be anybody, whatever. Like you say, I'm not naming any names. In fact, the majority of the time, it's great. And that's, I think, without tooting my own horn, I feel like I've always had an innate ability to make people feel comfortable in social situations. Like, if I chat with people, I tend to give them a lot of, you know, room to breathe. Like, it doesn't sound like it at the moment, but I tend to make people feel at ease, should we say. And that's always something I've always been very proud of as a human being. And
can you give me just a second to breathe here?
Sorry. You hang two seconds, and then you got 15 more words you've got to do for the quota.
All right, here goes. You're good.
I'm good. So I've, in terms of an interview nice. Setting, I try to, you know, give people like plenty of prep. Like, I'll send them a document with all the questions on it, for example. And this is what I want to ask. There's a couple of sub questions that might come up, but if anything else comes up, I just want you to know, just go nuts. And that has always made, like, every time I've then gone on to do the interview, people have always been like, thanks so much for sending that. That was really cool. I really appreciate it. You know, for those that aren't like necessarily that initiated in the podcast field, who are a bit worried about how they come across, how they sound, you know, do I speak now? Do I have to wait for you to finish talking? You know, it's always easier when I'm with someone who knows what they're doing, like yourself, for example. It's been a breeze, this particular episode. And, you know, for a lot of other people, I do have that. It's very easy to deal with. I have had problems in the past where people maybe haven't realized that they're, you know, maybe knocking on a table, or they haven't realized you know, doing something like that is actually coming through the recording. But I always say like, oh, you know, don't worry, but, you know, are you knocking on a table? Or are you doing this? And I'll always cut that out anyway. You know, it's not like I'm going to leave that in.
Say something intelligent for a change.
Yeah. Oh, God's sake, will you just say something funny? No. It's not that way at all. Like, I tend, and also in the edit, you can really make interviews sound great in the edit. Like, you can cut all the dead air, ums and ahs. I have to a lot of the time, and I do. It's like an OCD thing now. A lot of the time, that it does always come out a lot better than, say, the actual recording process was. But yeah, I've definitely had situations like that. Nothing like too extreme, but yeah, I'll put it this way. I much prefer it when people come on who are versed in podcast fields or radio or that kind of thing, where they know what to do and they're happy and they're bubbly and they're cool with that. That's always so much more, you know, enjoyable for me. But I've never really had a situation where I've been like, oh God, that was awful, and now I've got to edit it. That's very rare, you know.
Yeah. I think you're fantastic. You got the gift of gab, as aww. I said, on our Toy Guys Talking. I really appreciate
it. Kiss, 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 kiss.
But where? Yeah, I love talking with the fans, with other content creators, you know, like podcasters or people with channels too, because it's just, you know, they're in practice. That's something that they regularly do. And even if someone never does a podcast or a YouTube channel, if they're passionate about it, that is great.
Yeah, I mean, totally.
Because you don't dwell on the performance. You're thinking about the thing that you love. And, and that really comes off very naturally. In my own experience, just like you, it's been rare where it's been like, oof, that was a little rough. And I haven't even put them up because, you know, I don't want to put something up where people will point and laugh or go, oh, that was dreadful. That person's, you know, that's shouldn't be our purpose. And then some people do that. They're like, look how drunk this guy was, or look how stupid this guy is. But the funny thing about that, for anyone ever gets the opportunity to be a guest on a podcast or anything like that on a YouTube channel, and you don't do that regularly, you know, it, for what it's worth, the ones that I've talked to that were a little rough around the edges were the industry professionals.
Yeah.
Like the performers, the actual actors, and not many of them, but, you know, like an actor or even, you know, someone behind the scenes, a producer type of thing, because they're not passionate, you know, because it's a job.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. Like, it was just a job. And so they're sitting there.
Maybe sometimes a bit of resentment as well, because they haven't been doing what they wanted to in the field and they've had to settle for maybe lower level type situations. Yeah.
And so, yeah, they like, I can't believe I'm still talking about this 40 years later. And that's just not a chat that I want to have. Mm. And I've actually, you know, I've had the opportunity meeting a couple of, you know, celebrities or whatnot, people who worked on some of the stuff behind the scenes. And you go up, you say hi, you say thank you, appreciate, you know, your work on the thing. And you kind of, it's a feeling out process. And sometimes you just get the feeling of, this is not going to be a very pleasant chat.
Yes,
So shake the hand and you go on your way. And even though, you know, they probably would have said yes, I just feel like I've had enough of those where I just felt by the end of it, wow, like,
yeah,
sorry to bother you.
Yeah, big time. I've definitely had that feeling because I've done a lot of conventions, done the convention circuit in the UK and the US now pretty much. But when you go as, and I used to go with my friends, Nick and Mass at In Demand Toys. So I'd go like to help them along and, you know, you'd get the opportunity to wander around and see, and, you know, we'd probably end up seeing celebrities quite often. You know, we'd have people come to Nick and Mass's booth to buy toys for their kids or even for them. And you do get that kind of like that vibe of, look, I'm just a normal person right now. I don't want to talk about this stuff. And you don't like push them. You don't even mention it half the time. You get to that point where you realize, God, they really don't want to be here. Some of them are just in it for, you know, it could just be for the money or to help boost their image or whatever it is. And they're just not that into it. And that's the truth. Like, I only really want to talk to people that are going to be vibrant and bubbly, but at the same
time,
yeah, and genuine, definitely. But sometimes that you can't gauge that, because it might be some, you know, especially with what we do here at the Full Force, where it's like the news burst, where, you know, we want to be kind of on top of what's going on in the media side of things. And if you've never spoken to someone before, but you get the opportunity to maybe chat to a comic artist or writer or a, you know, someone that's doing a TV show or whatever, you kind of think, oh, brilliant, let's get them on and that kind of thing. And that, you know, you don't know what you're going to get. So it's like a bit of a gamble. But if I had the choice, it would always just be like, well, I know that person's really bubbly and cool. Hell yes, let's get them on the show. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's, you want to kind of keep that positivity going. And for those people that are in the brand for whatever reason, but they don't want to be, you always know it. You always feel that.
Would you call me bubbly?
I would call you professionally bubbly.
Carbonated. That's carbonated.
Yeah, professional, but professionally bubbly.
That's carbonated.
Is a hydroxymoron. From series three of the...
You have to create this, what is he, a Darkling Lord or a Spectral Knight?
He's both. He's like, you know, what was that Transformer? Was it Punch Counter Punch or whatever his name was? You know, where he was, yeah, exactly. He could be like he could be you know, he's a spy for, but he's a spy for Merklin. There you go.
What's his totem?
It would be the Two-Faced Rat.
The common Prismosian Two-Faced Rat.
Or a Two-Faced Watch.
Oh,
there you go. So it would have the different time on each face. There you go. Oh my god, this is getting really cool.
Somebody call Hasbro.
Can you do the poem? I'll do the figure design, and we'll combine forces.
Yeah, sounds good.
Anyway, Michael, we haven't quite reached the end yet. One more little topic I want to just quickly discuss with you before we call it a day. You have a really fantastic collection in your toy museum, as I know you love to call it. What's your main collector focus, and what's top dog in the world of Michael Mercy?
That's a great question, Christopher.
Correct.
Hey, I could run for office. Yeah. Isn't that the standard reply to every question?
This is the carbonated professionalism coming through again, isn't it?
Yeah, I appreciate you asking that question. That's a great question, Christopher. Run for prime minister.
You'll be taking over from Trudeau pretty soon, I imagine.
Oh boy.
Less of that. We'll carry on. We won't talk politics on this episode.
Yeah, exactly. I was giving that question some thought, and when I walk into the 80s toy museum, trademark, I look around, it changes. It's perpetually in motion.
Flux.
Yeah, it's in flux. And I think the reason I did it the way that I did it, so that it wasn't just a room filled with Optimus Prime or a room filled with Stormtroopers. I think the reason I did that was because when I used to go to Toys R Us, I would run over to the G.I. Joe section, be enamored with that for a week. And then after a week, I've seen these guys.
Yes.
Not that I went every day, but let's say like a month later, I've seen them so many times now. Oh, what are these? Silverhawks. Wow.
Yeah.
And be enamored with those. So it changes the sections. One week, the Brave Star section might catch my eye. And then another week, the Masterpiece Transformers. So it's constantly something that's in flux. And I take a closer look and, maybe one day I'll walk in there and really appreciate the commemorative carded He-Man figures. And, haven't had a good look at them for weeks or maybe even months and just go, wow, that's cool. And then, another week, it might be the Anniversary Joes on the wall. So having the variety just keeps it constantly in flux. And then there's the flag, which you never get old, never get tired of.
Oh, totally. I mean, the coffee table, as it's known.
Yeah.
Even for a coffee table, it's pretty big. I mean, that could be like a dinner table, I think.
It could be a bed.
I have seen some amazing customs of that thing. Well, like not customs, but like, kind of where people do things like make it float, like the G.I. Joe Bird guys. And I know they didn't do it initially. They utilized the technique from someone that had done it before. So I'm overstating these things because you're just going to get someone comment on it.
One day you might run for office and you don't want your election
and
to
I don't,
be cost.
I don't want those pictures coming out again.
A misunderstanding on this podcast.
Exactly. I don't want that coming out. So I don't want this. I don't even want this episode coming out. So I'm just going to leave it on the cutting room floor. Sorry.
It'll be a Patreon exclusive.
We'll call it a broom. We'll call this the broom cupboard. No, seriously, when it comes to like the amazing things I've seen with the flag, I think a bed is up there with something that's got to happen. Like someone has got to put a mattress on that bad boy and just be like, oh wow, and look, I can get off my bed and take this mattress off and then play with my toys. Like I'm sure someone has been drunk enough in their life, they've gone home and fallen asleep on it.
Ron Rudat.
100%.
And how about blankets to go with it? So gray blankets with the striping on them.
With a 99 pillow.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful.
Perfect. Perfect. Oh, mate. Yeah. Actually, that would be really cool. The blanket, actually, as a flag blanket is something that would sell hotcakes.
Oh.
Because you could have like Sky Strikers on it and different characters from like above, and you'd have to be like, oh, well, that's obviously Barbecue, and oh, that's cool, that's obviously Airtight. I'd pick those two up because you could obviously pick them out from above.
Yeah.
But yeah, that would be really cool. I might even design that.
Yeah. If you have a nightstand next to your bed with a light, that's kind of a superstructure. You could put a jewelry box there or something.
Hell
build it all up.
Yes. That's amazing. Yep. Why am I even bothering? I'm right. This is over. This interview is over. I'm working on that for the rest of the night.
I think the podcast is over. I mean, like, I think the Full Force podcast is coming to an end.
It has
you're gonna
to
make
be.
A fortune. You're gonna make a fortune on flag blankets, and you can retire and live out your days in
Bermuda. I'm calling them flankets.
Flankets. There you go. Enjoy your fortune, young man.
The USS Flankit. You guys are going to love this. Anyway, Michael, it's been an absolute pleasure, bud, to have you on. Thank you so much for jumping on. I really appreciated it.
It's been a blast. Thanks so much.
Unfortunately, we've gone on for so long, this is probably not going to come out until next week. But still, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure. So, I mean, before we go, tell us where everyone can get hold of you. I know it's pretty obvious, but I just tell us all of the places you operate on the line, as they say.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'm in Canada. Eh? Come on by. You hoser.
Canada.com.
Just Canada. Eh? You just drive north. I'll see you. I'll see you soon. Hey.
bring a flanket.
Bring a flanket. YouTube, you can just search for Michael Mercy. Twitter, I'm on there too. Just Twitter, Instagram, just search for my name. And the podcast, Toy Guys Talking, is now on, as I mentioned earlier, a bunch of those podcast catchers. If you have a podcast catcher that you like to use that you don't see it on, just send me a message anywhere. And I'm all new to this podcasting thing, so I've asked you a couple questions about it already,
and I've already given you really poor advice.
Go away. That's not advice.
Yeah, that's true. It's poor advice because it doesn't operate as advice necessarily.
Actually, I guess that is advice. No, you were very helpful. I appreciate that. But but if there's a catcher out there, I'm new to this whole thing, but I'm very excited to learn more about it and to do more chats. So for me, it's not just about talking to big superstars like you.
like Paddy Lennon Brian Hickey and Justin Bell, all the superstars of the world. Yes.
Like talking to just people, you know, like me, you know, just fans. I'm looking forward to doing a lot more Toy Guys Talking, because sometimes, you know, with the whatever property that you're a big fan of, there can be a lot of appreciating the thing in your collection, but not a lot of interacting with like-minded fans, you know, other than like a rare comment or a button hit on the internet. So I think in this day and age where everyone has Skype or FaceTime or, you know, all these other chat options where you can talk to people, you can even see them, it's just amazing, because I grew up in a time period where that was long distance and you didn't even get to see the people.
Yeah.
So now you can actually talk to people through the internet and it doesn't cost you anything. That's just amazing.
It's incredible. And once again, Michael, thank you so much for not just for coming on the show, but also for the incredible content you make on your channel. Because it's honestly, it's really like I very rarely, and that's not true, I do go on YouTube quite a bit. With the work that I tend to do, unfortunately, it takes up most of my time. But I always make time for certain people. You're one. Analog Tony's another. G.I. Joburg is another one in there. There are others. I'm just naming these because they come to my mind quickly.
Because you don't hate them.
Yeah, exactly. But there'll be other people going, what about mine? I'd probably listen to yours too, don't worry. But, I do make out, like, I try really hard to actually keep up with a lot of, you know, the guys that I really like. And you're definitely up there with that. And the quality is one of the reasons I come back to it each time. And also, one quick question before you go just came to me. Who dressed up as Snake Eyes in that video?
Oh.
You know, the Snake Eyes person that was behind you?
I would tell you, but it's classified.
Perfect answer. That's it for this installment of the Full Force News Burst. Thank you to my wonderful guest, Michael Mercy. See you next time. And as always, double FU.
Thanks, everyone. Have a great day.
Yo, Force!
Yo, go, Force! Full Joe! I don't think Full Joe was ever done, but that's got to be in there.
Go, Force!
Yo, Force! Full Force! Full Joe! Make sure you get involved with the discussion by liking, sharing, and commenting on these videos. And as always, you can keep up with the show after listening by following on Twitter @TheFullForce, liking the Facebook page, facebook.com/TheFullForce. And if you would like to contact the show, you can message us on either of those platforms with feedback or questions. We have also started a Patreon page, so if you want to see your name up in lights on these videos or enjoy exclusive bonus content, then check out patreon.com/TheFullForce podcast, or click the link on any of the posts this podcast appears in. Full Force.